And good evening and welcome to What's Bugging You, a special broadcast and call-in program where we ask you to call in with your questions about the insect life that both enlighten and enhance and infest our world here in the Arklatex area. Our numbers tonight are 800-552-8502, or you can send us an email. We are taking your emails tonight at listenermail@redriverradio.org. That's listenermail@redriverradio.org. Dr. Beverly Burden is our resident entomologist here at Red River Radio and also an associate professor of biology here at LSUS, and she will be our expert on hand tonight to talk with you about your questions concerning insects, whether that's how to go about creating a butterfly garden for yourself or bring in those useful insects that we all know about, or how to deal with an infestation. She will take your calls. There are also many other questions that she can answer tonight, so give us a call at 800-552-8502, or you can go online and send us an email to listenermail@redriverradio.org. That's listenermail@redriverradio.org. And we're going to get into our first question right now, a question about honeybee populations. Bob, do you have a question for Dr. Burden?
I sure do. I'd like to ask Dr. Burden, I've been reading a lot about disappearing honeybees and colony collapse disorder, and I wonder if you could comment on that, and especially in this area, there are a lot of, you know, honeybee hive owners for the crops and vegetables, and I'll take your comments off air.
Well, thank you, Bob. You brought up one of the greatest concerns that entomologists across this country are having right now, and that is the colony collapse disorder. Many people grossly underestimate the use of bees in pollinating our agricultural crops, in pollinating our fruits and vegetable crops. And so it's gotten to the point where out in California, their semi-trucks are actually loading up beehives and transporting them from one location to the other. These beekeepers are actually, you know, letting farmers rent these hives for the key period of pollination for those crops. Years ago, there was a little mite, kind of like a small spider, that were attacking the bees. It was called the varroa mite. And they finally, they don't really have that totally under control, but it's not as bad as it used to be. And they're believing that this varroa mite or other means are passing a virus between the colonies. And so they think it's viral. They're working on it. Honeybees are not my area of speciality, but it's something that everybody should keep an eye out on because it could severely damage our agricultural resources in this country.
Yeah, we had done, my last station, we had done a documentary on that very plight in the area with a number of the apiaries and specialists at the university that I was formerly at. It's devastating a lot of crop production in the South, especially because so much crop production, really the pollination is absolutely dependent upon the honeybees and a few other, you know, insect species.
Just a little bit of trivia. The crop that is the most dependent upon honeybee pollination are almonds.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So. I know all kinds of trivia.
There you go. All right. We are talking with Dr. Beverly Burden, our resident expert on insects and infestations and also the good kinds of insects, the ones that you'd like to have around. If you would like to ask her a question, give us a call at 800-552-8502. You can also send us an email to listenermail@redriverradio.org. That's listenermail@redriverradio.org. Of course, we definitely want to hear from you online if possible, but if you're shy, you can go ahead and send an email. And we do have a caller from Jacksonville, Texas. Lee, you're on the line with Dr. Beverly Burden.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
What is your question tonight, Lee?
Well, I've got, I'm living in about a 30-year-old mobile home, and when it was originally put here, they put railroad ties around for like a flower garden borders, and every spring, when it gets warm, all these winged things come out of those railroad ties. Well, I've sprayed them with all the bug stuff I can think of, but at the same time, a little later, I'm surrounded by huge post oak trees. And down out of these trees are coming all these winged things. Now, are they the same thing as coming up out of the ground?
Well, there are many winged insects that may be what you're describing. With the railroad tribes, most of those are treated with creosote. And creosote is an anti-termite compound. It's not uncommon for fire ants to inhabit the crevices, and they're naturally going to decay over time, especially the period of time of 30 years that you're talking about, Lee. And as far as the post-oak wing things, that could possibly be what we call gall flies. Are they approximately the same size from the railroad ties to the trees?
Yeah, the things that by the railroad ties, they're not coming out of the ties, they're coming out of the ground. And the things from the trees, people come out and cut off some trees out here, you know, some dangerous limbs. And when they got up in those trees, the guy said when he cut one off, these black ants poured out of there like water. And I was wondering, is that the same, are they carpenter ants or termites or what? Because they've eaten some in my garage, and it was closed up when they apparently bloomed. And the floor of my garage was covered with all these dead little things with white wings. I mean, like they couldn't get out. And they died or whatever. And I'm just wondering, are they termites or the ants?
Well, they're ants. Both coming out of the railroad ties. If they're coming up out of the soil, then they have to be ants. And there are other species of ants that will inhabit naturally formed galleries. And so when the trees, you know, the wood, a branch dies off, then the internal tree is going to decay, and there's going to be galleries in there that the ants can basically have their colony in. I wouldn't worry about it. Completely harmless. It's just a nuisance and a curiosity.
Well, see, in my garage, it's like this board siding, and I've noticed places where there's gouges out of it where they've been. And is that the ants eating that?
Well, in the garage, you may have some termites. Go in there and see if you can find some of those dirt tunnels like I was talking about.
Uh-huh.
Or just kind of take a board off and inspect it. That would be the best thing for me to tell you to do.
But then these things coming out of the trees, they're nothing to worry about, really.
Really. They're swarming ants.
Yeah, because they blow all over the place, and I'm afraid they're spreading or something.
Well, there's something you could. People ask me all the time, when are the insects going to take over the world? And my answer is that they already have. And they're just barely allowing us to coexist with them. And so as long as it's not causing, you know, a medical problem, I wouldn't worry about it.
All right. We want to thank you for your call, Lee. And you are listening to What's Bugging You. And our number again is 800-552-8502. You can go online and send us an email to listenermail@redriverradio.org or give us a call. We'd prefer to hear your calls, but we will take your emails tonight. And we do have another call online. Nick from Nacogdoches, Texas is calling in. Nick, what is your question for Dr. Burden?
Hi. I spend a lot of time outdoors out here, and I've noticed a lot more ticks just that, you know, they'll latch onto me or on my friends, and, you know, we know how to get rid of them and everything, but I'm curious if there's any specific species or anything I should be looking out for just in case of Lyme disease.
Yes. Ticks will fluctuate. Their populations will fluctuate from year to year. Some years will be high tick densities. Some years will be lower tick densities. Lyme disease is caused by deer tick, Ixodes. And I checked with the CDC about this time last year, and there were no reported cases of Lyme disease in which the Lyme disease was contracted here in Louisiana, especially down the central Louisiana area where you're located. A lot of people will go and vacation in Arkansas or in other locations where Lyme disease is a little bit more prevalent. And they'll come back into Louisiana from vacationing, and then they'll be diagnosed with a case of Lyme disease. Ticks normally take several hours to feed. And so when you go out into the woods that might have some tick infestations, you know, obviously wear DEET. DEET is a chemical diethyltolamide that is repellent for both mosquitoes and for ticks. And then when you get back, make sure you change your clothes and inspect yourself for ticks. And, of course, if for anybody listening, I should tell them, you know, you have to be very careful how you remove a tick. One, that you don't squeeze the tick's contents into your tissue, and two, that you don't leave the mouth parts embedded into the skin. And so, but here, Lyme disease is not that big of a threat. I would be more concerned with mosquito bites. Mosquitoes, people ask me what's the most dangerous animal in the world, and it's mosquitoes. Mosquitoes have been responsible for the death of more human beings than all the wars totaled together. And so that may be unbelievable, but it's true.
Now, ticks, you're leaving the mouth part in your flesh. Does that mean they can actually grow back a body part?
No, they won't be able to regenerate. It'll just cause a secondary infection with the body trying to reject it.
Because you hear a lot of, you know, old tales that, you know, well, if you don't pull it out completely, it's just going to regenerate itself and the like. So, all right, we do have another call online. Deborah from Doylen, Louisiana. Deborah, are you on the line? Doylen, what's your question for Dr. Burden?
Well, I live in a rural area of Webster Parish, and I was outside last night, and there was a big brown 2 to 3 inch tarantula in my front yard. And my question is this a native species to Louisiana?
We do have native species of tarantula here in Louisiana. And the funny thing about them is that a lot of people don't see tarantulas because they're in pockets. And unless you get into one of those pockets, or if they're in their mobile stations right now, they're kind of migrating into their breeding areas, and so that's probably why you saw it. Tarantulas are kind of unique in the fact that one way that you can tell a tarantula from like a large wolf spider is they're going to have hairier legs than wolf spiders. But if you ever take a really close look at them, which I'm sure only crazy people like I would do that, the fangs of tarantula are vertical, but the fangs of almost all other spiders, like black widows and brown recluse, they have horizontal fangs. So they come in almost like a pair of pliers. And so that's kind of unique. I would just leave the tarantula alone because you know what? They're predators, and they're going to be taking care of some of the bad insects out there for you, and I would just welcome them or just let them move on.
Waving goodbye, but I just didn't know if he was a visitor or native. I didn't know.
Yeah, we do have native species of tarantulas here.
No, okay. I'm very frightened. All right. You are listening to What's Bugging You with Dr. Beverly Burden, 800-552-8502. Give us a call now, and we will be sure to take on your questions. And you can ask Dr. Beverly Burden about either the infestations that you're concerned about, maybe just a curiosity, whatever is on your mind. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they said that bed bugs are resurging right now all throughout, throughout the United States and the world. Why are they suddenly resurging?
Well, bed bugs were a big problem before World War II. And then after World War II, we used DDT everywhere, and that knocked down the populations back. Why they're resurging, I can't tell you. What I can tell you is that they are resurging here in the United States. More and more people are talking about and finding bed bugs. And just let me share with the listening audience tonight what bed bugs look like and a little bit about their biology. Bed bugs are about the same size and color as an apple seed. They're that mahogany color, and they don't attach onto people when they're feeding like ticks do. They feed a little bit more like mosquitoes do, and they don't stay on the person like lice does. And during the day, they hide in crevices. They will hide behind the baseboards. They will hide in the seams of the mattress and the box springs. They've been known to get up underneath the wallpaper. And anytime you go to like a hotel or something, you should always check your room for bed bugs. Just pull back the sheets and look around the wall. And if you see a lot of dried blood flakes or a lot of little things that look like apple seeds, then change rooms or change hotels. And a lot of people will get bed bugs because of they'll take in used furniture. You know, if I would go to a garage sale and buy a new chest of drawers, I would make sure that it stayed out in the garage, or I heated it up, or I inspected for potential bed bugs. And the other thing about bed bugs, interesting enough, is that even though they feed on blood, they do not, they're not known to cause or transmit any known diseases. And so that's at least one good thing that I can put people to ease. The other reason that they may be on the insurgent increase is because people travel more and more. And luggage comes here and luggage goes there, and people are actually transporting these bed bugs around the country as we become more and more, as things become more cosmopolitan.
And that's why I think, you know, one of the plights of our ever-changing world is that we are an interchangeable society. Mm-hmm. You know, people travel all over the world. And of course, there was infestations of fruit flies and a whole lot of other things that have happened and continue to happen. And that's just, you know, a part of our cosmopolitan world.
There's actually something that's called airport malaria. Mm. Malaria is transmitted by the bite of mosquitoes. And people can go to the airport right here, you know, in Shreveport or in the United States and have a mosquito bite them, because mosquitoes get on the planes. They travel from here. They travel from there, from Africa and from the lower continents that have malaria. So you're right. Much, much more cosmopolitan.
All right. We've got John from Nacogdoches calling. John, what is your question for Dr. Beverly Burden?
Yes, doctor. I recently acquired several boxes of old books. And in some of those are some silverfish, I've noticed. And I was wondering if there's an easy way to treat those so they won't continue to eat the paper.
Well, actually what they're eating is, especially in old books where you have silverfish, what they're actually eating is the carbon-based glue that's holding the binders together and the pages together. And they will feed a little bit on the paper, but not that much. What I would do, if I were you, I would take my old books out, and I would completely put them in a different container. But before I throw that old cardboard box, you probably have them in some old wooden boxes or some cardboard boxes, take them out of those containers. And what I would personally do, I have a chest freezer in my garage, and I would put them in that chest freezer for 3 or 4 days, and that will freeze out the book lice. And the reason I say that you don't really want to spray the books is because it could damage the books, but freezing is probably be your best bet if you have that capability. Or you could put them in some place that was really, really hot. Really, really hot or really, really cold, then it's going to kill out the silverfish or any other critters that may be in there. Silverfish are going to be in there. There's also these little things that are called book lice. And they're oftentimes in there with the silverfish, but they're so small you probably recognize the silverfish. And baby silverfish can be very, very small, so you can't really just take a brush in there and brush them away either. Does that help you out, John?
Oh, he's already
he's gone.
Yeah, we've already let him go. I do have a question, I guess, about silverfish. I've opened up old books on numerous occasions and found the flattened silver, I presume they're dead. Mm-hmm. and harmless. How do you tell if a silverfish is dead? I've only found the dead ones. So, you know, what is the
how can you tell if a silverfish is alive?
Yeah.
They run away.
They run away. They're that fast.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I've
very
found
fast.
So many dead ones, I didn't know what a live one looked like.
Yeah.
You know?
I have some silverfish that are in some older books in my office, and I just let them be because I figure over time they're not going to do that much damage. And I kind of like – people used to see silverfish all the time. But now we have glues that are synthetic glues. And so I always thought silverfish lived in the boxes in my closet when I was a little mm-hmm. girl. And they did, but that's because they were attracted to the organic-based glue that yeah. used to be used all the time. But now we're going to all synthetics, and so you don't see yeah. them as much anymore.
I don't think I've ever seen a live one, but I've come across numerous dead ones because mm-hmm. I also collect old books, too. So you go to an old bookstore, and, you know, you're flipping through, and, oh, there's a dead silverfish, you know. And mm-hmm. I was like, or is it dead, you know? For all I know, that's like
no, they're very fast. They're very fast.
All right. We have another caller. Thank you for calling Dr. Beverly Burden. And what is your question? Hello, caller.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, doctor. Thank you for taking my call. Something I heard on NPR News probably a couple of months ago, and it doesn't have anything to do with bugs so much as it has to do with what's called a white-nosed fungus that has taken over the bat population up on the northeast, and is killing the bats, and it's just eradicating the bat population. And I was wondering if you knew anything about it and how far south it has it has made it. At the time I heard, I think it had made it to either North Carolina or South Carolina, and it was headed south, and there's nothing they can do to stop it, and it's killing off the little brown bats, the ones that fly around at night and eat mosquitoes.
Well, I'm not a mycologist, and so I don't really keep up with that so much to say, but let me just talk to you a little bit about fungus and other living organisms in general. Fungus are, it can be very hard to eradicate because it spreads through what we call mycelia. And the problem with bats is they have all that bat dung, the guano, that falls down, and that's just a nice, moist, rich organic matter for any type of fungus to grow. My curiosity is how the fungus is being transported. Is it being transported probably on the bats? But there may be other forms of transport as well. But that's something that I think would be a very serious problem because bats are what we would consider beneficial organisms to the ecosystem. And bats don't really eat as many mosquitoes as people think they do, but they do eat a lot of other insects and other what we would call varmints. So it would certainly be something to watch.
And you are listening to What's Bugging You, and you can call us right now at 800-552-8502. You can also go online and send us an email, listenermail@redriverradio.org. We'll take your emails and try to answer your questions. But we hope you'll give us a call, 800-552-8502. I know fire ants are, you know, something we never had to deal with up north, but certainly plentiful down here in the south. Other than chemical methods, what other methods are there for eradicating fire ants in your yard or you mm-hmm. know, around your home or in a playground or have you? What could you suggest that maybe would be really an environmentally friendly technique for eradicating fire ants?
There is a great fire ant site on the entomology page from Texas A&M University, and what they say, and this is being proposed by almost anybody that's dealing with fire ants, is that they call it the Texas two-step method, and that is they put out broadcast baits. There are broadcast baits for fire ants that you can put out in your yard periodically that the ants are going to, while they're out foraging, take it back to the mound. And then you can do the spot treatments on the mounds. Now, one myth is that if you treat a mound, it just moves to another location. That's not true. Most mounds, if you use a chemical that's called acephate, it's very, very good. And most of the other myths about treating fire ants, cornmeal, grits, that really doesn't work. Those are just myths. They have not been scientifically substantiated. And so that's what I do. I don't use broadcast baits. I just treat the mounds. And the thing about it is when you treat a mound, that mound, if you use the right pesticide, like an acephate, it's going to completely decimate that. But then the reason you see other mounds popping up is because there are other colonies around that main colony, but they're being suppressed by the main colony. And then once the most prevalent colony is out, then that allows those smaller colonies to go ahead and form because they're not being suppressed, inhibited by the other colony. And so that's what I say about fire ants.
All right. We've got Ray from Alexandria calling back. Did we answer your question, or do you need a follow-up? Ray?
My cell phone dropped us.
Oh, heavens to Betsy.
But thank you for letting me get back in.
Sure.
I had two things. One of them is a comment about the gentleman that called from Texas with all the insects flying out.
Yes.
And I was just wanting to say, I mean, I work in the pest control industry, and the doctor was talking about the creosote and the railroad ties. But usually, once those have been in the ground for a while, that tends to leach out, and the termites will get into the railroad ties.
Well, leaching of chemicals do certainly occur, but I would debate that that creosote concentration is so high that 30 years it might leach out enough not to be able to suppress termites. And the other thing that I'm glad you brought this topic up, Ray, is because somebody mentioned something about carpenter ants. And if you're in the industry, you know carpenter ants are not that big of a deal. carpenter ants are to the north what termites are to the south. And so we don't really have to worry about carpenter ants in this geographical location.
Right. Well, we don't do a whole lot with those. I see more with carpenter bees and
right.
termites than the carpenter ants. My other comment or question really was we've started seeing in the last few years some of the brown widow spiders, and I wonder if you've had any experience with those. They've been riding on trucks and freight and coming from Florida and Georgia and have moved into our area here. I don't know about further north in Louisiana.
Okay, Ray, go ahead and turn your radio back on. We've got a lot of callers in line, so we're going to have to stop you here. And so turn your radio on, and we'll go on to our next caller. What about the brown widows?
Yeah, the thing about you have to really know your spiders in order to say that they are of a different species, because black widows have a range in colors from brown to semi-brown black, to light black, to very dark black. And there is a species known as the brown widow that has more of a streaming type of marks on its body. And as we were saying earlier, things move about, and it's only natural that they're just going to spread. You know, as long as there's habitat there, as long as they're going to be able to outcompete other organisms that are occupying that niche. And the thing about black widows is that they're not aggressive. Brown widows, they're not aggressive. Brown recluse, they're not aggressive. Black widows will only bite if they are disturbed. And the biggest threat with black widows with humans are outdoor toilet facilities.
Yeah. I know at the last place that I lived at, it was out in the woods. I mean, literally, it was a very rustic setting. Had black widows all along my porch frame. You'd just see, you know, the little nest all along. And, you know, I was out there 10 years, never had a problem with one, you know, getting into the house in any place that, you know, I was bothered by them. Mm-hmm. But still, you think, I don't want to mess with them, don't you?
No. If you mess with them, they will become aggressive.
Right, yeah. So, all right, we have another caller online. John, you are online with Dr. Beverly Burden. What is your question?
Thank you. Interesting show.
Thank you.
I was told recently that if you put a planted marigold next to your tomato plant, that it would drive away bugs. And I've done this, one by each plant. But I wonder if there was any scientific reasoning behind it or if it was an old wives' tale. And I'll take my answer off air. Thank you.
Well, thank you, John. There is a scientific reason to do that. Marigolds, as well as chrysanthemums, produce a natural insecticide called a pyrethroid. And that's something that I actually wanted to talk a little bit about tonight. And that is, these are naturally occurring pesticides. That's actually what I do my research on. And they've been able to synthetically produce these pyrethroids. And one of the things I do with my freshman classes is I teach them how to read insecticide labels. And if you want one of these synthetic chemicals that we're now calling them pyrethrins, look at the active ingredients on the insecticide label. And anytime it ends in the suffix THRIN, then it's a derivative of these chrysanthemum marigold insecticides, and very safe to use because they are not the same nerve poisons as the like malathion and carbaryl 7 dust are. So those are really nice, environmentally friendly pesticides to use.
All right. And we have Devereaux online. Devereaux, what is your question for Dr. Burden?
Hey, how you doing? As you know, we experienced a little bit of a dry spell in Louisiana, and I am just bombarded with these crickets. They're like black crickets, and I mean, what kind of insecticide can I use to eradicate crickets?
Well, crickets are hard to eradicate because they hide in crevices and little holes. And crickets are vegetarians, but they don't really do that much damage to your ornamentals or your fruit crops or your vegetables. I would just leave them alone unless they're really becoming a pest. And then, you know, any type of general pesticide spray. And that's the reason I teach my students how to read insect labels. Go out and get you just a regular insecticide spray, whether it has a pyrethrin in it or if it has a liquid malathion. Any of those would be just fine, and that is going to do away with your cricket population.
I mean, they're like, they take up at the door, and I find like hundreds of dead ones at the front door, and they're like little holes in the yard.
They're probably not causing the little holes in the yard. They're, what you're describing is just the typical black field or house cricket, right, Devereaux?
Yeah, I mean, and they come in masses.
That's just going to occur from time to time. And like I said, insects have taken over the world. They're just allowing us to live here. And every once in a while, they'll become a nuisance. And if anything else, just take the broom out there and sweep them up and throw them away.
Okay.
And they're not dangerous to humans.
No. They're everywhere.
It's just a nuisance.
Just a nuisance.
And an aesthetic problem.
Okay. Well, thanks.
All right. Thanks for calling, Devereaux. You're listening to What's Bugging You here on Red River Radio, KDAQ, Shreveport-Bossier City, KLSA, Alexandria-Pineville, KBSA, El Dorado, and KLDN, Lufkin-Nacogdoches. And we'd like to get your calls tonight, 800-552-8502, or you can write us online at listenermail@redriverradio.org. We'll try to get you your emails, but obviously right now the calls are easier to get to. So give us a call and let us know what's bugging you tonight. And we're waiting for another call to come in. Now we've got Bill from Shreveport in the holding pattern, so to speak. So hopefully our folks will send him out there. The crickets, you said, you know, they're not really dangerous. They're not a disease-carrying bug, particularly, especially to humans. They just, you know, they make a lot of noise, and every now and then they make a nice mess. No other problems with crickets.
They'll go away with time.
Yeah,
everything does. And, you know, something that we haven't got a call on tonight, probably because even though these calls are semi-anonymous, nobody wants to let anybody know that they have a cockroach problem. Mm-hmm. So let me talk a little bit about cockroaches. There are literally hundreds of species of cockroaches, but there's only about 3 to 4 species that will lower themselves to live with humans. And the three main species that we have in this area, actually what I tell my classes is that they're small, medium, and large. The larger of the cockroaches is called the American cockroach. It's about an inch and a half long. And you can always tell a cockroach because you can't see its head. If you look at it above, it's going to have a little hood over its head. And if the little hood is dark brown with a halo around it, that's going to be the American cockroach. If it's completely solid brown, that's going to be a different species of cockroach called the smoky brown, and it's just accidentally in your house. The medium-sized cockroach is called the Oriental cockroach, and they like to live in very moist environments, and sometimes they have reduced wings, so you can actually see the segmentations on their abdomen. Down in Florida, they call these water bugs. But they're actually Oriental cockroaches, and they're a little bit tougher to control. And then the small one is called the German cockroach, and it's the one that's the hardest to get rid of. But if you do have a cockroach problem, you can actually spray them with a pyrethrin, THRIN, on the active ingredient, or what you can do as a preventive measure is put down boric acid. You can get boric acid, you know, from any of the hardware stores or major box stores or, you know, the dollar store. And just take, it's a little white powder, and just gently dust the areas around your cupboards. It's completely safe for humans and pets. And just gently dust it. And what happens, the cockroaches, they like to crawl around the edges of things. And they will pick up this boric acid, and then it will cause an irritation. So just like a cat cleaning themselves, the cockroach will clean this boric acid off of them and swallow it. And then when it gets down into the stomach, it actually blows little holes in the stomach of the cockroach, and they'll die of stomach perforations.
Interesting. With the cockroaches, are there any natural predators that deal with cockroaches?
Yes, there are. Birds will eat cockroaches. Birds will eat almost any kind of insects. I've seen my cat eat a cockroach. That's kind of interesting because they think it's a game. There are inside your house, you're probably the biggest predator of cockroaches than there is. But out in nature, a lot of snakes will eat any kind of insect. Anything that eats insects in general, like grasshoppers, will also eat cockroaches. And cockroaches, ironically, are oftentimes associated with, filth, and that may be true, but they've also, this is an interesting piece of trivia, Bill, they've been able to keep a cockroach colony going for a year by feeding them nothing but toenail clippings, because that's basically pure keratin protein. And so cockroaches can live off a lot of things, but they're not known to transmit any diseases. They can transport diseases, like if they crawl through salmonella-laden chicken juice, they can take it, and then they crawl up on the chocolate cake, then now the chocolate cake's going to have salmonella. And so that's one of the biggest problems with just transferring filth around.
So really, they don't carry any internal diseases?
Nothing that would affect humans, no.
That's interesting, because, you know, so many bugs, you just have this image, you know, of some as harmless and others as disease-laden. And so you wonder, you know, where does this image come from?
Now, the best way to control cockroaches is not to have food out for them to eat. You know, sanitation, cleanliness. Although very clean areas oftentimes all of a sudden will come up with a cockroach infestation.
Interesting. 800-552-8502, or you can go online, listenermail@redriverradio.org. That's listenermail@redriverradio.org. Give us your call for Dr. Beverly Burden. You're listening to What's Bugging You, and we're waiting for our next call to come in. So hopefully that will they're slow right now. Here we go. And we have Kathy from Maryville. You're online with Dr. Beverly Burden. What's your question?
Yes, I want to ask about town ants. I don't know if that's what you call them, but that's what I call them. We have a lot of problems with them around here.
Town ants, are they very small or about the size of a fire ant?
No, they're kind of reddish, and they leave little mounds, like red mounds.
Yes, I've seen those in my yard as well. First of all, as long as they're not getting into the house, I wouldn't worry too much about it. But any type of you could probably take anything that you would treat fire ants for, and that would also treat the town ants. I've never you heard that actual name, but there's a lot of common names that are used in regional areas. And so are they getting to your house, Kathy?
Well, no, but they go through my yard and they make little trails where you can see them carrying stuff.
Yeah, they're just
along
out
the trails, and it's in my yard.
Well, they're not going to hurt you.
And I know they're not going to hurt me, but I don't want them in my yard.
Well, then I would just get what you need to do is follow the trail back to the mound. Once you find the mound, then you're going to be able to use a traditional insecticide, you know, what a spray. You can go to the stores and there'll be, you know, sprays that are especially formulated for ants. I try not to get away. I try not to use trade names very much. Let's just say, you know, not fire ant killer, but, you know, ants be gone or something like that. And that'll take care of it. But you got to treat the mounds. Don't treat the individual ants.
Okay.
And that should work for you. You're welcome, Kathy. Thank you for the call.
All right. Thank you for your call, Kathy. And you are listening to What's Bugging You? And you can give us a call at 800-552-8502 and ask Dr. Beverly Burden your question about insect infestations, how to attract perhaps, you know, pleasant insects. Whatever your question is, she is our resident entomologist here. And what is your official, it's a professor of biology and life sciences?
Yeah, associate professor of biological sciences.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so we have the expert here. And we need your questions right now at 800-552-8502. Or again, you can go online at listenermail@redriverradio.org and send us an email with your question if you're a little bit bashful. But of course, we would like to have you online with Dr. Beverly Burden. It's a little more fun that way, a little more interactive. So.
Exactly.
And we are waiting for Drew to come in. Drew from Shreveport, I believe that you're up next. What is your question?
Yes, sir. Thank you. I have a garden, and in it we have these small, skinny, torsoed black and red bugs. The bodies are black, but the legs and the antenna are very long and red. And I was trying to figure out if they're eating anything, if they're there to control other pests, or if they're pests themselves.
Would you call these things beetles?
Not really. They don't have a hard shell or anything of that effect.
As long as they don't have the hard shell, I believe what you're describing are going to be what we would call true bugs. And these are probably in the family of Pyriidae because of the redness. And they're out there eating other bugs. So they're predators. And so I would leave them alone, and they will mature, and they'll be good for you. Are you noticing any other insects that might be out there feeding on your garden?
I haven't noticed any other ones, honestly.
Mm-hmm. What type of plants do you have out there, Drew?
I have various herbs, a blueberry bush, peppers, a lot of peppers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would just leave those little bugs alone. And sometimes I'm trying to think of the common name of those. But they're good bugs. Leave them out there.
Okay, thank you.
It's good to know which bugs are good bugs and which bugs are not good bugs. So give us a call right now, and you can find out the answers to your question, 800-552-8502. Go online at listenermail at redriverradio.org, and we will try to answer your questions tonight. What are some of the other good garden bugs that you might see around? You're not quite sure, but you see them, and you know that mm-hmm. they're going to help you out. I know ladybugs are one of the better garden bugs, but what maybe are some of the others?
Ladybugs are good. Another one that a lot of people don't realize, you'll see these come to your porch light. So at night, and they're called green lacewings, and they're very delicate. They're pale green. They have like golden eyes, and they are voracious predators. Of course, the praying mantids, you know, they're out there eating. Any of the spiders are going to be good. And also, a lot of people, when they think of wasps, the only thing that they think of are the paper wasps that build their nest, but there are a lot of solitary wasps that actually parasitizes and consumes other insects as well. So as long as they're not, you know, the paper wasp that's going to sting you or be very aggressive, then wasps are very good. Different species of wasp are out there.
All right, and we have Bill from Shreveport next online. And Bill, you're online with Dr. Beverly Burden. What is your question?
I just moved here 3 years ago from California. And
you might want to turn your radio down, Bill, right now because you're going to get terrible feedback.
And I wanted to talk to her about where to get beneficial insects that you could use in your garden because I did that in California, plus planting a lot of marigolds and stuff.
Yeah, well, with beneficial insects, there are companies that will sell these little wasps that are called trichogrammids. And that parasitizes. One of the best things you can do to encourage beneficial insects in your yard is not to use a lot of pesticides out there, because they are actually more vulnerable to the pesticides than the pests are. And so reduction of pesticide use. And I know of a couple companies, but I'd rather not say them over the air. But if you go online and just search beneficial insects, or the trichogramma wasp, then that's going to come up. And you can order ladybugs from some of these companies, the little trichogramma wasp. Some people actually order the little praying mantids. And one of the things that you could actually do for praying mantids is if you go out hiking a lot, praying mantids lay their eggs as a little egg case. It almost looks like a paper mache purse on stems. I've been known to break those stems off and bring them back and just throw them in my yard, and then the little praying mantids hatch out and they go to town eating things.
Interesting. All right. The number to call, 800-552-8502. We have about 10 minutes left in our show, and we are going to Scott. And Scott, what is your question? Scott, you're from Alexandria, correct?
Sir, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Hey, I had I don't know if there's such a thing as a drain fly.
Yep.
It looks like it's almost
Does it look like
fly.
A little? Does it look like a little bitty gray moth?
No, it looks like a fruit fly. And every morning that I get up in the shower and in the kitchen, there's 20 or 30 of these little dead It looks like fruit flies to me.
There are some flies that are called drain flies. They're in the family Samelidae, and sometimes they're actually called moth flies because they're so little. But they, if you look at them close enough, they probably have little dusty wings. Or if it's not that, it's what we call a fungus gnat. And I bet that's probably closer to what you have than what we would call a drain fly. And the thing about flies, Scott, is that the immatures of flies have to grow in some type of a moist environment. And so if it's in the kitchen, I would make sure that there's no food down in the drains that's down there holding moisture together. If it's in the bathroom, a lot of times the hair gets in the drains and it mats up, and that could be a viable habitat for the immatures. If you control the moisture, you control the flies. And they're harmless. And so just make sure that you find out where the immatures are growing, and if you take care of that problem, you'll take care of the adult flies.
All right. Thank you very much for your call, and we're going to go next to Mark from Leesville. Mark, you're online with Dr. Beverly Burden. What's your question?
Hi, Dr. Burden.
Hi.
We live in west central Louisiana in the Piney Woods, and we've had problems with scorpions.
Ah.
Exterminator says that there's no way to get rid of scorpions unless you shoot them directly with a chemical. And I was just wondering if there may be any natural predators or any other means of getting rid of scorpions. And I'll take your answers offline.
Mark. Thank you for that question. I love to talk about scorpions. First of all, scorpions are fantastic predators, and they're nocturnal predators. And a scorpion can get anywhere that you can see light through. And so one thing that you could do if they're coming to your house is to, turn on the lights and then go outside and see if you can see anywhere that light can come in, and go ahead and just put down, you can get those door strips that will have a tighter seal, okay? Oftentimes, people will stack firewood on their back steps, and that's a great habitat for scorpions to be in. If a scorpion is in your house, I can guarantee you it is lost. It does not want to be in your house because there's probably nothing for it to feed on in your house. The other cool thing about scorpions is you can buy catalogs like a flashlight, but it's going to be a UV light. When you shine a UV light on a scorpion, it actually fluoresces. It will light them up just like a UV light on many other things. And so what I would do if I had a scorpion problem, I would get me a UV light, and I would go out there at night, and I would see where they're coming from. And then you can take that habitat away. Now, back in the rural areas, that may not be an option for you. That would be a little bit more applicable to more urban settings. But you need to make your house tight so the scorpions can't get in. Otherwise, they're sharing the same habitat that you're sharing with them, and you may just have to agree to cohabitate.
Interesting. I've actually been stung by a scorpion, and you see in the movies, the scorpion's deadly poisonous. About the only thing it caused was a little bit of a rash and an irritation. Now, but there are some highly poisonous varieties,
not in
the United States.
In the United States, the scorpions, even the big black scorpions that they have out in Arizona, it's going to be very similar to a wasp sting or a bee sting. And unless somebody is hyper allergic, they probably know if they're allergic to wasp stings and bee stings because they have to carry an EpiPen. But for the regular person that doesn't have hyperallergies to venom, it's going to be okay.
Interesting. The number to call, 800-552-8502. We've got time for just a couple of more calls, and we've got a couple that are waiting in the bullpen, so to speak. And we'll take as many calls as we can, but we are out at 7 o'clock. So please go ahead and send an email, and we'll do a follow-up show. This has been really fun. So go ahead and make your calls now. If we can't get to you now, we'll let you know when the follow-up show is.
Who's up next?
Well, it's supposed to be Irving, but so far I'm not seeing it flash. So we're hoping that they'll send it in right away. 800-552-8502. You're listening to What What's Bugging You? From Red River Radio with Dr. Beverly Burden. And we hope that you will call in tonight or send us an email, and we'll try to get to your calls. What other things are swarming right now that
mosquitoes.
We might need to?
Mosquitoes.
Well, yeah, the obvious yeah. one.
But you know, let me say something about mosquitoes. When you see the fogger that comes through town and they're fogging, that's primarily there for the adults. Sometimes they are spreading what we call larvicides. Immature mosquitoes have to develop in water. And so in order to control the mosquito population around your yard, take care of staying in water. If you have old flower pots, if you have old tires, anything of standing water, you need to empty that water, and that will go a long way in controlling your mosquitoes. If you have ponds, a lot of people have these little garden ponds in their backyard. There are actually things that are called mosquito donuts, and they actually contain a chemical that's derived from a bacteria called Bacillus thuringiensis iridensis, or Israelis. And so these little BT particles are completely safe for the fish, or if the dog or the cat drinks out of the pond, and that's another good way to control mosquitoes.
That's interesting. We are going to take one more call. We have Irving online. Irving, what is your question for Dr. Beverly Burden? Irving? Hello, Irving. Can you hear me?
This is Mark.
Oh, Mark. I'm sorry. Mark from Jacksonville.
Okay.
We have you online. Go ahead.
Well, I have two or three questions. I have several catawba trees in my yard.
You got the big catawba worms?
Yeah, and one year I may have a great abundance of them, and the next year I may not have them. And the years that I have them, my neighbors just love me because they're the best catfish bait in the world.
Yes, yes, they are. And I was going to say, be careful how many people you let know that you have catawba trees, catawba worms, because the fisher and the anglers are going to be out there wanting to pick them up. These we call them worms, but in reality, they're actually caterpillars. And once they get to a certain size, then they will drop to the ground, and they will burrow into the soil where they will pupate. And then emerging from them is something that we call a catawba moth. And it belongs in a family called sphinx moths. They have very robust bodies. They're tapered at one end, kind of like a carrot shape, but a short little stocky carrot shape. They're fantastic flyers. And most of the time, you know, you can use traditional pesticides to kill the catawba worms, but unless they're doing a lot of damage to your trees, I would just leave them alone. They're great things to talk about, though. I love them.
All right. I want to thank you, Dr. Beverly Burden, and thank all of our callers tonight for calling in. You've been listening. The music is appropriate. This has been a whirlwind of a show tonight, and we've had a lot of fun. And we're going to have you back real soon so that we can go through this again. You're listening to What's Bugging You from KDAQ, Shreveport-Bossier City, KLSA, Alexandria, Pineville, KBSA, El Dorado, KLDN, Lufkin, Nacogdoches. We are a public broadcasting service of LSUS. You can listen to us online at redriverradio.org. I want to thank Dr. Beverly Burden and Wally and everybody else out there, and thank you for tuning in tonight.